What is happening, Tappers? Happy Saturday. It is May 12th, a very special day in my life, because the lady friend, Miss Morgan, it's her birthday. So happy birthday to her. She knows I've birthday shouted her out all day. Finally getting to the pod. I've been doing odds and ends around the house and thought, I need to sit down, do a little podcasting. There also was an open house around my apartment for the last 4 hours. So odds are somebody's going to barge in here at some point and hear me ranting and raving about God knows what. But glad to be back in the saddle, excited to talk with you guys. We will get into the Milwaukee Brewers comeback. We'll also talk about Gary D'Amato's just assy article about Becky Hammon. And then look at this Matt Patricia story that seems to be not picking up maybe the steam that I think people expect it to, or not sure why it isn't picking up the steam, but so we'll see there. But you'll know you can find us, NoTapWI, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, as well as subscribe on iTunes, subscribe on Google Play, Stitcher, SoundCloud, whatever you do prefer. All right, let's dive in. So the Milwaukee Brewers last night were down 9-3. We were out for Morgan's birthday. We were at Eagle Park Brewery. And the Rockies just poured it on in the fourth inning. And I, like, you know, kind of said to Mitch, I said, hey, look, it's early. It's Coors Field. A lot can happen. And even when you say something like that, you don't always believe it, because you expect that maybe Colorado will get a few more runs and game might end like 12-6 or something like that. Well, the Brewers just kept chipping away. They kept getting runs. They kept adding to this, to their comeback. And the Rockies ended up getting an extra run. Carlos Gonzalez hits a home run, and it's 10-8 heading into the ninth inning. And you're kind of like, well, it was a good effort. Like, glad the Brewers at least had a shot. And it's down in the ninth inning. Wade Davis, very good closer, doesn't give up a lot of home runs. They do get a runner on, and Manny Pena just kind of pokes one out to right field. And I was watching the game from like a reflection at Nomad last night, and we had moved at that point. And I just see it, and I start going nuts, and I go over to celebrate with my boys because, I mean, it was incredible. I mean, you tie it up. You go then into extras. They win it in the 10th inning with a Travis Shaw single, scoring Lorenzo Cain, and Josh Hader shuts the door on Charlie Blackman, Nolan Arenado, and Trevor Story. I mean, just an amazing game from the Brewers. I mean, just amazing. You know, the clip from Jesus Aguilar after that, like, not tonight, was amazing. I think the Brewers really are playing good baseball, and they're, you know, it's the offense woke up. I mean, this is something that Mitch and I talked about on the podcast. You can go back and listen to Having a Keg. We're like, is this offense going to come to life? And I said, Coors Field's a great indicator. We kind of saw it a little bit on Thursday night. They got 5 runs. They did a lot of their damage early on. But then today, they, for the first time really all season, the Brewers' bats needed to pick up the pitching, and they did it. And that's such a refreshing thing to see, that maybe they can turn it on, and maybe Craig Counsell needs to preach, like, guys, play like this every night. Play with this set. Play like you're down 6 runs all the time, because it's clear that the Brewers were just free swinging. They weren't thinking too much. They weren't worried about home runs. They were just worried about getting runs. They were just driving the ball. And it was a great game. And Travis Shaw, who has the night off tonight, actually, Jesus Aguilar is playing third base, which I don't really know how exactly that's going to work, but we'll see. That's an interesting little wrinkle for the Brewers on Saturday night. But Travis Shaw had himself a great game. I mean, Travis Shaw, again, the second straight day where Shaw has done well. He hit a homer early on when the Brewers did actually have a lead. So Shaw's doing all right. I mean, he's finally kind of starting to come to life a little bit, which is something you really do love to see, because the Brewers desperately need it. I mean, they desperately need Travis Shaw to be somewhere in the range of a 275 hitter with home runs, obviously. Lorenzo Cain had another big night, going 3-for-6. And yeah, the Brewers just kept playing. I mean, they just kept hitting the baseball, and the bullpen also deserves some credit. I mean, they're an unsung hero in this bunch. So after, you know, Woodruff did get touched up, and Jacob Barnes for that matter, and Taylor Williams. So all those guys gave up runs. And then after that, the door was shut by Dan Jennings, Boone Logan, Jeremy Jeffers, and Josh Hader. Jeffers and Hader continue to be some of the more dominant pitchers the Brewers have. Jeffers and Logan did allow a base runner to reach. Actually, Jennings did too. He gave up two hits. But all those guys were great last night. I mean, Williams, who's been really good for the team, he made one mistake. And actually, they optioned Jacob Barnes today to the Sky Sox because Barnes has actually kind of hit a rough patch. He's still at 2.84 ERA. Like, he's not been... I mean, that's not great for a reliever, but he's still okay. They brought up Alec Asher, who pitched for the Orioles. I'm not sure if I remember. I think he was not a very good starting pitcher. So obviously his nickname is the Big Cat, which is always good. Anytime you got a guy nicknamed the Big Cat is good. But yes, he was horrible last year. He had a 5.25 ERA. He gave up 10 home runs. He walked 23 batters. This guy is really bad. So, well, and I will say, like, he was decent as a starter for the Phillies the year prior. It was really bad in 2015. But yeah, so I don't know. Maybe Asher has got himself figured out. You know, Derek Johnson's kind of a magic man. But holy hell, man, this guy, I don't know. I don't know if this is the right move. We'll see. Like I said, Jesus Aguilar's playing third base. Things are getting weird. We'll see how they do tonight. I mean, it's technically a house money next two games. You'd like to see them win one, but you get a split in a four-game series, it's pretty good. You'd like to see you win three as you've just won the first two. Now the Rockies have suddenly lost three straight, and the Brewers' bats seem to be rolling a little bit. Kyle Freeland is not very good as a left-hander, especially against righty bats, so wouldn't be surprised if Kane and Aguilar and Perez, I think, in the lineup, have a big, big night. Ryan Braun, too, has to be a kind of on red alert here this evening. But you also do have to worry about Chase Anderson. Chase Anderson has been giving up the long ball at an alarming rate. Now he goes to Coors Field. It might not be the best spot for him. But we'll talk about it on tomorrow's podcast, which I will do prior to the Mother's Day festivities. Little Saturday night, late night podcast, potentially. Or first thing in the morning. We'll see. Whatever I prefer, because it is my podcast. It is my show. But great win for the Brewers. Happy that they kept the ball rolling. All right, moving on to Gary D'Amato's column about Becky Hammon. He wrote a column about Becky Hammon, basically outlining that the time isn't right for Becky Hammon to coach the Bucks. And D'Amato basically made the point that, you know, Hammon would struggle, you know, with the marketing, with just people wouldn't respect her, worried about the players. And it came across as a very misogynistic article. And D'Amato, being the local columnist, doesn't necessarily get himself into these hot takes. Like, he's not a Dan Shaughnessy type. Or I think there was that Steve Rosenblum guy from Chicago who wrote that Roquan Smith is setting a bad example by getting his shit stolen, and inferred that he may have, like, got impermissible benefits at Georgia with no real fucking proof. That's not usually, like, D'Amato's bag. Like, D'Amato writes columns, but it's never really, like, something that we talk about, right? So he wrote this column for Saturday basically saying Hammond's, you know, it's not the right time for Hammond to be the coach. And it basically sounded like he didn't think that a woman could coach a professional basketball team. And Gary D'Amato should have just left this alone. Gary D'Amato should not have even approached this topic. And it's a classic old guy who doesn't understand how today's world works. Like, you see that often. It seems like we're getting less and less of that, because they just get run off the internet. Like, Gary D'Amato is not really an active tweeter, but if he was, I think he would have got just absolutely shitstormed yesterday about basically that Hammond isn't, you know, Alex Lazzari basically stepped out, and they made also, D'Amato made a comment that it's like part of the progressive thing with the fact that Lazzari's are heavy Democratic progressive supporters just overall. And he's like, that doesn't matter. Like, Alex Lazzari's like, we're bringing her in because she's a good coach. And if you listen to Mitch and I's discussion about Becky Hammon on Thursday, we sort of hit on the fact that we like the idea of maybe Becky Hammon being the top assistant and working under Budenholzer or Ettore Messina or someone who in the Spurs, hopefully not Monty Williams. She'd actually be better than Monty Williams. But hopefully somebody that to work underneath, because we also were kind of like, yeah, I think Becky Hammon would work, but there is yet definitely a seasoning thing, and there's only a very few who's been able to do that. Still, the way D'Amato approached it was not that. He didn't lay out like, hey, look, here's how coaches do in their first couple of years. Like, Mishael again talked about this. Like, Brad Stevens is like the pure example of a guy, and he's an anomaly. Like, Billy Donovan really hasn't been a successful coach. I mean, he did well, but he had an amazing amount of talent. Like, Becky Hammon would not have that talent in Milwaukee. She'd have Giannis, but, and maybe Jabari. I guess she'd have, I don't know if she'd have similar talent to Billy Donovan, but there would be that. And yes, would there be a lot of assholes about a Hammon hiring? Sure there would be. It would expose a lot of people, but guess what? That should not matter. At the end of the day, what all matters is he or she the best person for the job? And if Becky Hammon is the very best person for the job, then great. Then she should be the coach of the Milwaukee Bucks. If she's not, all right, that's fine too. That's not a problem. And if it's like, we would love to bring Becky Hammon into the fold, but we don't think she's ready to be a head coach yet, but we want her to be a top assistant or the second assistant to Mike Budenholzer or whomever, fantastic. Great. That's good too. And yes, even if that happens, you'll still get assholes who think that a woman can't coach a man. And it's just so short-sighted. It's just that, especially in the game of basketball, right? Like, why is it not an issue that Gino Auriemma coaches a bunch of women? Why is it not a big deal that the Louisville coach and the Mississippi State coach, a very successful women's basketball programs, are coached by men? Why is that not an issue? Just because we are so, it's a masculinity thing that we think that these like men couldn't be coached by a woman, or that they would look at her differently, or they would be like animals, is so like naive and so like just, I don't even want to say, it's just we think of our athletes in such a different manner, and it's unfair to them too. Like, it's unfair to think that, it's ignorant of D'Amato, and D'Amato put this in, that athletes wouldn't respect her, and that's a worry. If they don't respect her, then fuck, get them out of there. If they're not going to respect who's their coach, no matter who it is, you know, Chris Middleton, and I'm just using him as an example, Chris Middleton could go in and not respect Budenholzer or Steve Clifford or any of those guys, and he could say, yeah, I don't, you know, whatever. Then get rid of Chris Middleton. If he doesn't respect Becky Hammon, that's the same thing. You send the message. It does not matter. It is, and that's where we just have to get out of that mindset. And I think D'Amato wanted to write the column, but I don't think he came at it at the right angle. I think he should have presented it with a new coach presents new challenges, and brought up the Brad Stevens stuff and Billy Donovan and other and failed college coaches like a Rick Pitino, John Calipari, just to name a few, about people who just come on. Mark Jackson even is another example of someone who just came fresh out of the box and didn't do much. So Becky Hammon, they just like leave it alone unless you understand what you're talking about. That's all I gotta say. Moving forward, I did want to mention the Matt Patricia story a little bit, because it's inside the division. It's, I think, a story that should be getting bigger. I don't know if it's one of those things by like Monday it becomes a national story, but you know, the fact of the matter is Matt Patricia right now, for those who don't know, Matt Patricia had to have a press conference on Thursday denying allegations of a sexual assault that happened 21 years ago. The Detroit Free Press uncovered it. The Lions did not know of this in any of their background checks. The Patriots didn't seem to know any bit of this. It was a case that was dismissed at the very end because the accuser could not take distress per the report, and they had multiple witnesses that were ready to testify against Patricia and his friend. So it begs the question about why didn't Matt Patricia disclose any of this? Even if he was innocent, it was what he says, why wouldn't Matt Patricia go to them and say, guys, look, here's what happened. I had a sexual assault case, and I was dismissed. Nothing really happened. Why wouldn't he tell somebody? Did he worry that it was going to cost him a career? Did he worry that he would only be a defensive coordinator because people probably wouldn't bring on that for a head coach? Why is it just kind of not being talked about? I feel like if we had a situation where, let's say, an athlete who was 28 had a sexual assault case that was later dismissed, And you don't think we want to be talking about that at the A block for everything? Even if it was a 10-year-old story, it's 20-year in Patricia's case? Absolutely. And, you know, skeletons are a bitch, just in general. We all have skeletons. Some of us have skeletons that are more severe than others. Definitely, I would put Patricia in this category. And I think there has to be a decision made about how much of talent, like, he has to be, especially with the new reports about all the witnesses, he has to be open and upfront about this to the Lions, because if they let this linger, I mean, this could be the biggest story of the summer. I mean, this is a massive scandal. It is, if the Lions covered it up in any way, then that becomes an even bigger story. And we all know if the Patriots somehow covered this up, then it explodes, because anything involving the Patriots in the NFL is catnip to ESPN or Fox or anybody like that. So at some point, I think we really need to have a full discussion about this. And does Matt Patricia deserve to have a job? I think at this point, he does. But if it's found out that this guy basically has lied his way through this and he was never going to reveal the story and was going to keep it to himself, I don't know. It's kind of like lying on your resume. It's like gray area, man. It's a very much a gray area. And also, what kind of message does that send to your fans? You know, male and female. It's not just especially female. And also too, what does message send to the NFL fans? Because they've said time and again that it's on us. Like, they're the whole "it's on us" campaign. Like, what do we do now? I mean, Reuben Foster, we had a domestic violence felony that got dropped out of the blue. I mean, we're seeing more and more that this stuff gets just dropped, that they don't want to pursue it because it may ruin their livelihood, and somehow whatever they're doing, it's kind of just a funky time after the Ezekiel Elliott, Greg Hardy, sort of Adrian Peterson, even more for child abuse, but same concept of just that's sort of the thing. So I don't know where it's going to go from here, but it's a story that I think should be definitely talked about by a lot of people. But that'll wrap up the podcast today. We'll wrap up the Brewers tomorrow. We'll do Brewers. We'll do Eastern Conference Finals. Maybe some Mother's Day. Maybe it's time for me to say I cracked the code on brunch, since I know all of you assholes will be out to brunch tomorrow for no real goddamn reason. Brunch. Yeah, we can have a brunch conversation tomorrow. Let's do some brunch conversation as well tomorrow. All right, Tappers, take care of yourself. Have a good Saturday night. Stay safe wherever you are. All right, peace.